Now, we're a little bit behind schedule, but today it's not so bad because Rabbi Gordon is out of the country, so I can go for about an hour, but afterwards I have to get to the men at Kol Hal Sinai, so... we're just going to have to learn how to keep a class to within 50 to 55 minutes, which is extremely difficult. Rabbis have, you know, we're not professors, and we start talking, we just start talking. Every year, and it's been going on, I think about 15 years we've been saying Shurim, I always have difficulty with Parashat Noach. And my problem with Noach is always Noach. And I keep changing my mind about Noach. Every year, it's the same thing. It's already 1 year I'm all for Noach, 1 year I'm all opposed to Noach. And I think therein precisely lies the beauty of the rabbinic statement that Rashi brings at the beginning of Parashat Noach, that there are those who see him in a positive light and those who see him in a negative light, because there are all sorts of ways to look at Noach. Now, I think that a number of years ago, I condemned Noach for something. And I want to do tshuva today. I want to do tshuva. Yeah, but this is something else I have to do tshuva on. It gets very dangerous when you people remember what I say from year to year. That's why my first two positions I left after 10 years, and I started repeating drashas after 10 years, and some guy'd say, but Rabbi, you said the same thing 10 years ago. That's very bad. But Noach, I think it was last year, it may have been a few years ago, that I condemned him about the fact that you go through the Sedra, so much happens. There is so much that happens. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him and tells him that he is to make a teva. He works on the ark for 120 years. God tells him that I'm going to bring the flood. He tells him to enter the ark, all of animal kind will come to him, and they will also be there. He is supposed to gather enough provisions for all of mankind and animal kind to survive for a year in the Teva. He's there for a year. He sends out the raven. He sends out the dove. Finally, he comes out onto dry land. I mean, there's so much. We're talking about a tremendous amount of activity that goes on during the entire parsha, and we don't hear a word from Noach. Not a single solitary word. And when he finally does say something, it is after he's drunk. He planted a vineyard. I don't know where he had the patience. Maybe if you live about 900 years, you have patience. You understand he wants to get drunk, so first he has to plant the grapes and wait until the grapes are ripened. I mean, we can have starved from waiting all of that. But finally, he makes the wine. He drinks. He gets drunk. His son Chum sees him. And it's not clear what happens, but certainly Chum does not treat his father with great respect. Shem and Yafet are the ones who, when they are told by Chum, sort of, you know, Pa is out there lying like a shikah guy in his tent. It is Shem and Chum who, with dignity, take a blanket with which walking backwards so that they should not see the nakedness of their father. They cover him up. Now is the first moment that Noach opens his mouth. We hear something. Vayiketz Noach miyeno. Noach woke up from his wine. Vayedat asher also lo b'noach katan, and he knew what his son had done to him. Vayomer. Here it is. Oror Kanan. Accursed is Kanan. Eved avodim yiyel le'echov. A slave of slaves he shall be to his brothers. Vayomer, and he also made a second statement. Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem, blessed is God, the God of Shem, V'yi Kenan Eved Lamod, let Kenan be a servant of Shem. Yafta Lukim LeYefet, let God broaden and beautify Yefet, V'yishkon V'olei Shem, but he will dwell in the tents of Shem, V'yi Kenan Eved Lamod, again, Kenan should be a servant of his. The first word that comes out of his mouth is Aror, accursed. I mean, I would have felt better if he would have said first Baruch Shem and Baruch Yefet and then Aror Kenan. But the first word that he utters is Aror, cursed be Kenan. So I was upset by that. And I think I may have said some things about Noach that maybe I shouldn't have said. And I certainly am going to make a case now why precisely what Noach says, the first words that are uttered from his mouth, are extremely important and very significant. And that it may very well go to the heart of the entire parsha. That Aror Kenan, accursed be Kenan, Ever Avodim Yelechad. In order to get where I want to go, which is going to be someplace toward the end of this year, I would like to take you through a number of other very important ideas. One of them is said by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the Mashgiach in the Miri Yeshiva, in a very fascinating essay, and there may have been parts of this essay that we learned 10 or 12 years ago, and if anybody tells me they remember, I don't believe them. But we're going to emphasize other aspects of it now. And if you take a look at the sheet that you have in front of you, it begins, number one is a Klei Yakar. The Klei Yakar says the following. Klei Yakar is one of the Mefarshim that you find in the Kroz Gedolos Chumash. Klei Yakar says the following. God tells Noach, Kach lecha mikol machol, one of the mitzvahs, or the commands. Kach lecha mikol machol, God tells him, take unto you from all food. You have to have provisions in the Teva. Kach lecha mikol machol, you should take all food, asher yeyachel, I'm reading the rest of the pasuk, Va'ato kach lecha mikol machol asher yeyachel, you take food from all that will be eaten, v'asafte elecha, and gather it unto you, v'hoya lecha, v'lohem lo'achala, and it shall be for you and for them to eat. What the Klei Yakar is interested in is why the first word lecha, kach lecha, take unto you. What would have been wrong if it would have simply said, Noach, kach, take all sorts of food and provision and put it into the teva. So the Klei Yakar says the following. Lecha, the word lecha, mashma mishel lecha, lo mishel achedim. The word lecha means it has to belong to you and not that which you receive from others. Lecha, yours, and not that which you receive from others. Kederech, mishelechem hanema bidalid, meaning just like by the dalid meaning lulav esrik arava hadas, it says ulakachtem lachem beyom arishon, take unto you on the first day, from which we learn it has to belong to you. You can't have something borrowed and you can't have something stolen, for sure it must be yours. So the Klei Yakar says the same thing is true here. Hashem tells Noach to stack the teva with provisions. They have to belong to you. Why does it have to belong to him? What's so significant about that? And what happens if he sends his kids around? I don't know if they do it in your building, but where we live, you know, they walk around with a Yad Eliezer, I understand, a sakit, and they just stand there by the door, and you... Why can't he make a magabit? You understand, we did it for Biafra, and we did it for all sorts of other hungry people. He could have made some kind of a campaign. Food, food for all of animal kind. So the Kleyoka says, first of all, he says, "Kidei shelo yachshov Noach," so that Noach should not think, "Harei hayom umachar yomutu kulam," so that Noach shouldn't think, "Listen, today or tomorrow, any day now, they're all going to die, and whatever they have, whatever the rest of mankind has, will be ownerless. So I can take from that which belongs to others. Umemonam kala, their money and that which belongs to them will all be over. Sa'alket aitach amina, I would have thought shemuta likach mishalehem." So I would have thought that Noach might make the mistake of thinking, "Listen, you know, what you have is going to be useless to you. You're not going to be around, so I might as well use it." Talmud Lama, therefore, God tells him, "Kach lecha, take from you, mishalecho dafke. It has to be yours." Now, he continues the sentence, but he seems to be going off in a different direction. Lahagdil hanes, in order that the miracle should be even greater. Afal pi shekefi hateva lo yispoke ki im lechol levad, shehadei vaday lo hoye lo noach motarot mikol makom al tzad hanes, yishlach Hashem et habracha basamach. He says, the point of it all coming from Noach alone, in order to make it clear that there's a great miracle taking place over here. There is absolutely no way that Noach will ever be able to provide the provisions for all of mankind or all of animal kind for a whole year. It means whatever he puts in there is just never going to be enough. Which means that this is also going to be part of the miracle, that whatever he brings is going to suffice for the whole year. Just like the teva, it's... Huh? Like the man. Yes, a miracle. I was going to say, like the teva. I mean, when you read the dimensions of the teva, 300 amma in length, you think, there, vase, 300 amma in length, and you have visions of the Queen Mary or the Queen Elizabeth or Christ. The teva was a very small boat. And the idea that all of mankind, I keep saying mankind, I mean the remnants of mankind and all of animal kind go in there was a great miracle. So here too, this is part of the great miracle. Okay, that's the Kleyoka. Along comes Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, and he has problems with this Kleyoka. Because he says, first of all, problem number one is that the first and the last part, part one and part two of the Kleyoka, are in contradiction with one another. In part one, he's saying it should be yours and not stolen, not that which you took from somebody else. Now, if the point is it should not be stolen, it should be shelecha, not stolen, if that's the whole point, but I could ask other people to assist me, right? What happens if I'm not going to steal it? I'm going to run a campaign, save animal kind. Save animal kind, you know, you can deposit into such and such number in Bank Mizrahi, and save animal kind. But the second part of the Kleyoka says that the purpose is that it should be from Noach's possessions alone in order that the nes be great. Which means even if he would borrow from others, that wouldn't be good. So he's contradicting himself. According to the first pshat, that it should be yours and not stolen, but what happens if I don't steal it? What happens if I beg? Or what happens if I get people to donate? That would be fine according to the first part of the Kleyoka. According to the second part of that, the Kleyoka, it wouldn't be good at all, because the purpose is that it should come from him alone. And if it comes from him alone, then there's a great miracle. Everybody understands that a great miracle is taking place over here. That's number one. Number two, Kleyoka says that God tells Noach, it should be yours, and don't think you can take from somebody else. Lo yala al hadat. How could it even occur to us that Noach would have thought of that? What was the sin that sealed the fate of the Dor HaMabul? Rashi says, Lo nechtam gizar dinam elo al hagezel. Robbery, stealing, was the final straw. And it was because of that the decree of destruction was issued against him. So you're going to tell me, Noach, Ish Tzadik, Tom Hoyabedorosov, he may be moved to steal from others in order to provide for animal kind. Lo yala la da. How could the Kli Yavar have thought that? Third question and last question. Third and last question is, did it really occur to Noach at any point that God was indeed going to bring destruction? He doesn't believe it. You know, the Rebbeinu can give ultimatums and not keep them. I mean, that happens. Another 120 years and the world is destroyed. 120 years pass and it's possible that nothing is going to happen. Proof that it's so? First of all, in number two, I bring the Rashi. You see a little underline over there. It's a shracha underline, and it's a small Rashi. Small only in size, but magnificent in its meaning. It says, the Torah says that Noah went into the ark from before the waters of the Mabul, which seems to leave the impression that here the waters of the Mabul are beginning to engulf him, and at the very last moment, in he goes. So Rashi says, "Af Noach mikatane amono haya." Now I will translate it as it is usually understood. "Af Noach mikatane amono haya." Noach was one of the small believers. Mamin ve'eino mamin shi'avo hamabul. He believed and he didn't believe that the Mabul was going to come. V'lo nichnas l'teva. He didn't go into the ark ad shetochkuhu amayim until the waters pushed him in. He doesn't really believe it's gonna happen. So how could the Kli Yavar say that Noach thought that maybe since all these poor people are going to die anyway, I can take anything I want of theirs, when he doesn't really believe that the Mabul is going to come? It won't be. And the fact is, he has good reason to believe that it won't happen. Number one, God didn't going to destroy his world. He can't imagine Rabbeinu Shalom Kirachum v'chanun edech apayim daf chesed v'emes. You're going to destroy your world? You're going to take a whole world and destroy it? I can't believe it. God, man, I don't believe it. And he had good reason. On your sheet over there, number 5, on the left-hand side, the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, Asarat Dorot Me Adam Ad Noach. There were 10 generations from Adam until Noach. In order to tell us how long suffering God is, all of these generations angered him and continued angering him until he brought the waters of the flood upon them. So Noah knows that God has been angry for all of these years, but he hasn't destroyed the world. He'll find a way out. He's going to destroy a world that he brought into being. I don't buy it. And then, of course, it goes on to say, Asoda Torres mi Noach ad Avram, 10 generations from Noach till Avram. Lahudia kamaerech apayim lefonos, to tell us again how long-suffering God is and how he controls his anger. Shekol hadorot hoyum achisin uboin. All of these generations caused him anger. At Shabba Avram the Kibel Olav Schar Kulam, until Avram came and he received the reward for all of them. So Noach has very good reason to believe that the Mabul is going to come. He certainly does not have reason to believe that it will come. And therefore, how could the Kli Yavar even assume that he might want to take that which belongs to others, because they're not going to be here anyway? Just an aside, I have on the side of the Mishnah, I have the Perush of Kahati on the Mishnah, and Asara Dorot Me Odom Adnar, so he makes things easier for you and he tells you what the 10 generations are. This I remember having told you a few years ago. I used to have a Rebbe. We'd come to his house, you know, on Shabbos, Parshas Noach, and he'd ask us, you know, what are the 10 generations from Noach till Avraham? Parshas Noach, so he'd ask us, what are the 10 generations from Noach till Avraham? So everybody would start, Noach, Shem, finished, you were out of the box. You were out of the box. Okay. And we didn't know, you know, it took... until, of course, we started telling future generations of students who went to his house on Shabbos, if he asks you what are the 10 generations from Noach till Avraham, don't start with Noach. Noach is the 10th generation from Adam. So he has over there the Asara Torah, Mi Adam Ad Noach, Adam Sheis Enosh Kenom Mahalale Yored Chanoch Metushelach Lemach Noach. The 10 generations from Noach till Avraham begin with Shem. Shame, Arpachshad, Shelach, Eve, Peleg, Reu, Sedrug, Nochor, Terach, Avram. By the way, it would be extremely impressive for your children and grandchildren if you spend a few minutes learning the Asara Doras from Adam until Noach, and then from Noach till Avram, and then Friday night at the table you'll be able to ask one of your children or grandchildren, tell me what are the Asara Doras from Noach till Avraham, and then you'll just roll it off over there. It's a very, very good thing. It's extremely impressive. So therefore the Klei Yakar, how can he assume that Noach thinks that they're all going to be destroyed? And since they're all going to be destroyed, so he can take whatever he wants. And furthermore, even in the Parsha itself, it says when the Mabul begins, it says the following. It says, it says that the waters came by Yehi HaGeshem Al Haaretz. Chapter 7, Pasuk 12. It says, Vayihi HaGeshem Al Haaretz. The Mabul begins, and it says, there was rain upon the earth. Arboim Yom V'Arboim Laila. Rashi says, Vayihi HaGeshem, there was rain. This is what you call rain. So Rashi says, Ulahalon V'Omer, later it's going to say, Vayihi HaMabul, the flood. Elok Yishahu Ridon, when God brought the rain down, he brought it to begin with, Berachamim, with great mercy. She'en yagzenu, if they'll do tshuva even now at this late moment, do you know what? That water will turn into gishme bracha, rain of blessing. Ukishalo chazru, but what they didn't do tshuva, it became the flood. So that means even HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself was still hoping, hope upon hope till the very last minute, that he won't have to bring a mabul. And I think therefore we have to understand that Rashi that we learned, that Rashi says that Noach was Miketane Amona is not a negative description of Noach. He was a small believer. No, Miketane Amona was, he was a big believer, but he had very small belief in the idea that God would indeed destroy his world. Maybe for that matter he even had small belief that men would permit it to happen. Maybe he thought even to the last moment, you know, even those people are going to do tshuva. So therefore I can't for a moment assume that Noach would have thought, listen, they're all going to die anyway, so I might as well take whatever I can from them. So Reb Chaim says the following. He wants to say his own pshat in kach lecha mishalecha. He has his own pshat. Why did God tell Noach that all the food that he brings into the teva should be lecha, yours? It has to belong to you. And he bases it on a number of introductions. Introduction number one is the famous story in the Gemara in Shabbos, where a prospective convert comes to Shammai and he asks Shammai, please teach me all of Torah as I stand on one leg and one foot. And Shammai gets rid of him. We once said pshat in that slightly different than the Gemara seems to indicate, he has no use for somebody who wants to know all of Torah as they stand on one leg. But then he goes to Hillel. Hillel, of course, is portrayed by the Gemara as being kind and soft-spoken and long-suffering, the one who is makar of everybody. So he asks Hillel, teach me all of Torah as I stand on one foot. So he tells him, Mad alach sani, what is hateful to you, lechavroch lo tavid, don't do it to your friend. Don't do anything to your friend that's hateful to you. Idach peirusha, the rest is commentary, now zil gemar, now go learn. I mean, though it's not really the same as the pasuk in Torah of Yohavta, le'eacho kamocha, love your neighbor like yourself, but that's not the topic of this shiur today. There's a big difference between telling somebody love your neighbor like yourself or telling somebody don't do that which is hateful to you, don't do to anybody else. I once made the comment, if somebody would tell me something like that, I would be insulted to the very core of my being. You think I would do something that's hateful to me, I do to somebody else? What are you talking about? You have to tell me that. But I had said at the time that Hillel was was a realist, and Hillel was extremely suspicious of intellectuals who, because of their great intellect, decide that they are going to become Jewish, because great intellects can destroy a whole world with their great minds and with their deep thought. And therefore he says, just remember one thing. Anything that's hateful to you, don't do to anybody else, because the great intellect is also the one who can decide that, well, some people are vermin and therefore have to be exterminated. I mean, and they can do it while they're listening to the strains of Wagner. Yeah. All of that is fine. Shama Macharpa, we need to import that to Eretz Yisrael yet. If, while they're in the midst of killing us, you know, they're playing Wagner over there. I should go. We're not a smart people. I'm beginning to wonder. What, didn't they have, I couldn't read it, there was an article that they played Wagner for the first time in Israel? That's right. How many Jews were killed that day that they played Wagner? Okay, all right. That has nothing to do with it. Anyway, so Hillel doesn't have too much faith in those who are great intellects, and therefore he says, listen, just if it's hateful to you, don't do it to anybody else, because you could even justify intellectually doing the ugliest things to others. What was this convert looking for? The convert was looking for something that would open up to him all of Torah. Now, Torah is too much to embrace in one single instant in time. Where you're learning Sefer HaChinuch, you're going to learn all of the mitzvahs. You need something that is going to pave a road for you, and the fact is the Gemara understood this. There's a famous Gemara toward the end of Masechet Makot where the Gemara says 613 mitzvahs were given at Sinai. Afterwards David came and condensed them to 11. Yeshayahu condensed them to 6. Micha the prophet condensed them to 3. Yirmiyahu condensed it to 2. Habakkuk brought it all down to 1. It doesn't, God forbid, mean that they simply forgot about all of the mitzvahs. They were looking for the key that would open up all of mitzvahs, or the key that would keep me keeping mitzvahs. And while there were others who were able to embrace all 613 mitzvahs, as the generations diminished in their greatness, they needed something to be that key to unlock Torah. The last one was Habakkuk. And Habakkuk is the one who said, one, Tzadik be'emunato yichya, the righteous live with faith. Ultimately, faith. And the one who has emuno, has faith, that can lead to an understanding of everything else. So that there's one root, or there's one core, and everything else comes from that root and that one core. Hillel was telling the guy, v'yahavta reyacho kamocha, that's really what he was telling him. Or, don't do that which is hateful to you, don't do. In other words, this was the core, the key by which he was going to help him enter the portals of Torah. By the way, v'yahavta reyacho kamocha also has another meaning. Man's truly best friend is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. V'yahavta l'reacho kamocha means not only love of man, it also means love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the limit of love? Or what is its definition? The definition is one ready for any sacrifice as a result of that love? V'yahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol ma'odecha, meaning love of God, its ultimate test is one ready to die for it. I would say parenthetically the test of we'll see it in a moment, the test of Ahavat Eretz Yisrael is one ready to die for it. Right now it seems that there are others who are ready to die for it. I don't know the extent to which we are. Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, or a willingness to self-sacrifice, is the very definition of love. There is an amazing Ramban. Ilu, the whole shir was only so that you should know this Ramban, Dagenu, it was worth it. The Ramban, number three, it's on the Aseret HaDibrot in Parshat Yitro, where God says that everything, all great blessings, havai, for those who love me, ulishomrei mitzvotai, those who keep my mitzvot. Ramban says the following, umasati bin mechilt, I found in the medrash of the mechilt, havai, who are those who love me? Ze Avraham v'keyotze, but that's Avraham and those like him. Ulishomrei mitzvotai, those who keep my mitzvot, elu hanevi'im v'hazakenim, the prophets and the elders. Rabbi Natan Omer, listen to Rabbi Natan. Oh, Rabbi Natan Omer, lo havai ulishomrei mitzvotai, those who love me and those who keep my mitzvot, elu shein yoshim be'eretz Yisrael v'notnim nafsham al mitzvot. Those who live in Eretz Yisrael and are moser nefesh in order to fulfill mitzvot. Malacha yotzei leharei, the Mechilta goes on to say, man was asked, why are you being taken out to be killed? Al shemalti et b'ni, his answer is, because I performed the mitzvah of Mila. Malacha yotzei leharei, why are you being burned at the stake? Al shakarati b'torah, because I read in the Torah. Malacha yotzei leharei, why are you being taken out to be crucified? Al shachalti et ha-matzah, because I ate matzah. Malacha loke me'aparkal, why are you being beaten with a stick? Al shenatalti et ha-lulav, because I took a lulav. I would also suggest, if we're to read this medrash again, Rabbi Natan Omer le'ohavai l'shomrei mitzvotai, I would put a semicolon at the end of the first sentence. Those who live in Eretz Yisrael. And all the suffering is only because we're Jewish. Only because we're Jewish. Elu Shem Yoshu Beretz Yisrael. Back to the rest of the Medrash V'Omer, Asher Hoketi Beit Ma'avai Hamakot Ha'elu Gormuli Le'ehov La'avi Shebashamayim. Rabbi Natan says the suffering has had the effect of causing me to truly love my God. And the Ramban explains, Hade Pirush Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Natan said, Ki Ahava Mesirat HaNefesh Al HaMitzvot, real love is expressed by a willingness to sacrifice for mitzvah. That's all we need of the Ramban. Love, therefore, he says, is only the result of tremendous effort and a willingness and a readiness to for Mesiras Nefesh. There is a statement in Masechet Derech Eretz that says the following: Im atah rotzeh lihitavek bi'ahavat chavercha, if you truly want to love your friend, having no say v'notein b'tovato. Here is the great chiddush of Reb Chaim. If you really want to love somebody, you know what? You should do things for him. Reb Chaim says we make the terrible mistake of thinking we love those who do things for us. And the truth is precisely the opposite. We love those for whom we do. Everything we do strengthens and deepens our love for a fellow human being. It's not because I'm on the receiving end. It's only when I'm on the giving end. Here's where Reb Chaim finally comes to the point that he wants to make. Noah, in order to be able to take care of all of animal kind for a year, is going to have to be imbued with a deep, abiding love for them. Otherwise, he'll never be able to do it. More than 12 months in the Teva, and he has to know the feeding time of every animal, and he has to know what they need. He has to devote himself day and night. Chazal say, he and his children didn't sleep, didn't rest. They were concerned with all of animal kind. This was their responsibility. So the Rebbeim is thinking to himself, how is Noach ever going to be able to do a job of this sort? It's an awesome and impossible job. Unless, of course, he has developed a profound and a deep relationship with them. A deep relationship with them can only come as the result of giving. Therefore, Reb Chaim says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Noach, Kach lecha, all the provisions and all of the food and everything you're going to prepare for them has to be from yours. You have to give and give and give and give, and in that process you are going to develop a love unto Mesirat Nefesh for animal kind. Only that way will you be able to survive. Only that way will you be able to carry out that which I ask of you. Very beautiful. Very, very beautiful pshat, he says. Now forget the idea that love is the result of receiving. Oh, people can receive everything and still have absolutely no love, and we'll see that in a moment. Because ultimately I have to get back to the words, the first words that are uttered by Noah. Horror! He curses Canaan and Chum. You understand Chum owes everything he is and his very life. He owes it all to Noah. And he has absolutely no gratitude whatsoever. You can be on the receiving end a whole lifetime and still not have a love and respect for a parent. It's unbelievable. That's a terrible curse. Canaan brings the curse upon himself. Canaan don't realize the extent to which they owe everything that they are, they owe everything to Noah. They owe everything to Noah. And more than that. Let's learn a few psukim. I always like to learn a few psukim. And here I just want to go back to an idea that we came up with a few years ago. Not only is Noach's first utterance terribly significant, which will be the ultimate final point of the year, not only is that significant, Noach's silence is so profound. His silence is so deafening, it's unbelievable. This silent Noach, I then expressed it as, well, you know, we always say that, Avram prayed on behalf of mankind, Avram spoke up to God, Avram is the one who confronted God, Avram, you know, and Noach, sort of silent Noach. Oy, but there are silences that are so punctuated with meaning. And Noach, with his silence, accomplishes things for mankind. I just want to point it out. The parasha that we have over here is Vayomer Elokim al Noach. Let me just tell you what it says before in Torah. He's been commanded to leave the teva. Also pretty strange. Say, now he knows that it's dry already. The dove has come back. He knows the earth is dry. It's all over. The marble, the rain has ended. Everything is dry. There's growth back again. He doesn't go out of the teva. He receives a special command from God. Say, min hateva, go out of the God of the ark. Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lemor Elokim. This you don't have on your sheet. Elohim spoke to Noah, saying, "Tzei min ha-teva, go out of the ark." What was he waiting for? What does he have to be told to? What do you mean he's obedient? I don't understand. You're only supposed to be in the ark so that you can be saved from the rains. There's no rains. Everything is dry. I mean, what, he's supposed to remain in the ark for the rest of his life? No, do you know what Noah is doing when he remains in the ark until he's commanded to leave? Eventually, you destroy the whole world. I don't want to be the one to rebuild it. What do you think? I have to walk out onto a world that has turned into a cemetery? What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to walk now upon the bones and the body of all of mankind. I don't want to go. You'll force me to go, I'll go. God spoke to Noah saying, "Shame in our table, go out of the ark." I don't know if he said it precisely like that. But wait a minute. He says, go out of the ark, Atov Yishtacha, you and your wife, Ubonecha, and your sons, when we say Ubonecha Yitach, and your sons' wives with them. So do you see how the Bereshim says it? The Bereshim says, you and your wife, they and their wives, because from this point on and further, you are permitted to live together as man and wife in order to repopulate the world. So, Vayetze Noach, Ubonov, the Ishto. But you know what he's doing? Defiance number two. The Ben Shalom, I defy you. I'm communicating with you. I didn't want to go out, and you tell me to go out now and rebuild the world. I'm not going to do it. Why even Noah Mizbeach? Noah builds a Mizbeach, and then God smells the great carbon, and God says, the seasons will be forever as they were, and nothing is ever going to change in all of history. Okay? Day, night, summer, winter, everything great. No word from Noach. And then by the Baruch Kimet Noach Levonov, God blesses Noach and his sons, and he says to them, Pru Revu, be fruitful and multiply, umilut hearts and fill the world. And then at the end again, Vatem Pru Revu, Shir Tzuvaretz Uruvuba, be fruitful, multiply, spread out. Heard a word from Noah? Not a word from Noah. Not a word. Silent Noah. Do you know what he's doing in his silence? In his silence, he's defying the Rabbeinu Shalom. He's done nothing, and he's going to do nothing. Do you know what he's really doing? Noach is an extremely skillful negotiator. The Rabbeinu Shem tells him twice through the root, saying, "In our table, you and your wife and your children and their wives, poker faced. No response, not a twitch." The impression that he is clearly sending, the message that he's sending to Beisham, it's not good enough. And then we come to the psukim that we have right here. Vayomer l'kim al Noach, l'kim said to Noach, el bono vito lemor. You know how you have to understand it? Beisham's up against the wall. If Noach and his children are not going to procreate, then it's all over. Finished. We bring down the curtain. Last scene, last act, it's all over. Noach knows that he has the Rabbeinu Shalom over a barrel. So you know what he's going to do? He's going to use it to the hilt. In this parasha, you will see, it says Vayomer Elokim three times, and the Mefarshim ask, why does it say Vayomer Elokim? It's all one parasha. Why does it say, and he said, and God said, and God said, and God said. You know why? Because each time God says, and he thinks that this is going to satisfy Noach, not a word. Noach, poker face. So the Rishon ups the ante, and he gives him an even more, a stronger commitment. Watch. Vayomer Elokim al Noach, one of the Elohim, Elokim said to Noach and his children, by the way, first time around he spoke to Noach, and now he's speaking to Noach and his children. We're going to make a treaty. There's going to be a covenant. God had never mentioned the covenant. I'm going to make a treaty. And not only with you, but that kol nefesh hachayos, all of the living beings, the fowl, the animal, all of the beasts of the land. Mikol yotzei hateva, anybody that came out of the ark with kol chayos haaretz, v'hakimoti, not only do I make a covenant, I'm going to keep it. V'akimoti et b'riti etchem, I will establish my covenant with you. V'lo yikardeis kol basar od mimei amavu. He never made this promise yet. First time he makes this promise. Nobody is ever going to be destroyed by amavu. V'lo yia'od mavu l'shachet ha'aretz. So at this point, there's no longer going to be amavu. I mean, this is quite a commitment. The end of the conflict. You understand? The end of the conflict. It's all over. No more destruction. So you would expect right now that Noach would say, okay, Rabbeinu Shalom, I'm going to do what you want. No. Not a word. No, it doesn't say a word. Vayomer Elokim. Elokim says, Zot Ot HaBrit. I know what's bothering you, Noach. Not enough that we have a covenant. You want a sign that's going to bind me to the covenant. Zot Ot HaBrit. Asher Amino Teng Ben Yiyu Ben Echem. Uben Kol Nefesh Chai Yishim Chum Lidon. Es Kashti Nasat Yonan. I place the bow in the cloud, and that's going to be an oath brit. In other words, this is not simply a verbal contract, this is a contract. Nature is part of the contract. When there will be clouds on the earth, the bow will be seen in the yonon. And I will remember briti asher bein yu bein echem, between me and you, bein kol nefesh chaya, between every living being, the kol basa, v'lo yia'ot hamayim l'mabu l'shaknis kol basa. Third time he's saying it already. There will never be another marvel to destroy all flesh. V'haita keshet v'anon, and the keshet, the bow, is going to be in the anon uriti, and I'll see it, lizkar, to remember b'rit olam ben olgim ben gondar. And I left out the next pasuk, you know, I get a little confused and I start pasting the things together, and it says, the next pasuk is going to be, for the third time, by Yomer Elokim El Noach. In other words, he says, not only have I made a covenant with you, I have now established in nature a sign for the covenant. What more do you want, Noach? And Noach remains silent. And then the last pasuk, Vayomer Elokim El Noach, Zot Ot HaBrit. He wants, show me the rainbow. Zot Ot HaBrit. That's it. Oh, that's it? Okay. Now I know. Everything's out on the table. The next pasuk says, B'nei Noach that went out of the table of Shem, Chom, and Yafes, and the process of rebirth begins. I say that there are people who can accomplish great things by speaking out. And Noach accomplishes awesome things by remaining silent. Nonverbal dissent, we call it. Nonverbal dissent. He has the Ribbono Shel Olam in a corner, and he's going to use it because he cares about all of mankind. And here, okay, so he gets drunk. So he gets drunk. What happens when he gets drunk? Shem and Cham are the ones who are going to act with decency and dignity, treat their father with dignity, but not so Cham. Cham, in fact, treats his father with contempt, absolute contempt. And even when he sees him in his nakedness, it's one specific area of nakedness that he focuses in on. He looks for the he looks for that which is the true shame of his father. He has no use for him. He didn't see his father as a great man who had been weighed down by a lifetime of struggle, who had momentarily lapsed. You know how he looks at his father? He looks at his father as a cheap drunk with no redeeming features. He didn't feel his father's shame. He comes out afterwards and he tells his brothers, take a look at Pai there. He reveled as he reviled his father. There's no fear, no respect, no regard for his father. Do you know what that means? That means that as far as Ham is concerned, he has absolutely no link to the past. He has no past. Certain what we said earlier, that there's absolutely no gratitude whatsoever for the fact that he's alive. That he's alive. None whatsoever. None whatsoever. Do you know what he's interested in? The moment. He has some kind of a perverted pleasure in seeing his father in that state. He lives for the moment. You know what happens when you live for the moment? That's destructive of all of mankind. Living for the moment means I don't care about anybody else. I care only about myself. If I have pleasure now, I'm going to have pleasure now. And everybody else, forget about everybody else. The moment that Ham severs himself in such an ugly way from his father, do you know what the father knows when he finally wakes up to the reality of Ham? That everything he worked for and all of the promises that he got from the Ribbono Shel Olam and all the effort that he went to in order to save a world are all a waste, because as a result of Ham, it's starting all over again. And everything that happened before is going to be repeated all over again now. Ham. I'll take you one step further. Final step. Lo nechtam gzar dinam el al hagezel. We've learned that Rashi before, that the gzar din, the decree against the generation, was because of gezel, because of robbery, thievery. What are you? We're talking about people who are murderers, people who committed the worst cardinal sins of all. Lo nechtam gzar dinam el al hagezel. So it occurs to me, what I'm reminded of is a famous book by the Rav Salvation said, Tzadik with Racha, where in Nila on Yom Kippur we say, of all things, we don't list all of our Avedas, but we ask of God that He forgives us, Leman Nerdal Me Oshek Yedenu, we should be able to stop stealing. Is that? I mean, it's a bad Aveda. Don't get me wrong, I'm not in favor of stealing, but it's not the worst. So the Rav explained, Leman Nerdal Me Oshek Yedenu, that if we don't appreciate and respect the past,
and we don't transmit to the future all that we received from the generations that preceded us. We're thieves. Our lives and our very beings belong to them. Ham is what he is because of Noach. And he has no respect. Treats his father with contempt, which means all of his life and all of his talents and everything that he has is stolen. It's not his. We didn't give it to you so that you should turn around and treat us with absolute abuse. He's the ultimate Goslin. That's what Ham is. And he knows that it's all over. It's all going to start all over again. And therefore, in Ham, he sees the destruction of his life work. And therefore, the most positive comment that can come out of his mouth, the first thing to come out of his mouth, Oror! Be accursed because you're going to bring destruction upon yourself and upon all of mankind. You are the antithesis of everything that I lived for a whole lifetime. And I have a feeling that there is a blessing here when he says that Canaan should be an Eved Avodim to his brothers. Maybe you'll learn a little bit from Shem and Yafet. Maybe a little bit of Shem and Yafet is going to rub off on you. This horror that is the first word that issues from his mouth, and I had once sort of thought not nicely of Noah because of that first word. Brilliant, his first word. Yeah, when you see evil, an evil that is destructive of everything to come, it has to be condemned. You don't make deals with evil. Evil has to be condemned completely. Oro Canaan is the most positive statement that Noah can make. Yes, he breaks his silence to say that. Otherwise, his whole life has been a waste. It'll be easier to deal with Avram next week. Okay. He skips because he's talking about the generations to come. Exactly. He's finished.